Genesis chapter 45 and 46. So, hopefully y'all read Genesis 44, 18 through 34, which was Judah's plea before Joseph, not knowing it was Joseph, obviously, and his plea on behalf of his father. Now we have, beginning in chapter 45, Joseph's reaction. So, as usual, terrible chapter break, because you've got chapter 44 ending with Judah's statement and chapter 45 starting with Joseph's reaction to that statement. So if you were to just pick up in chapter 45 and not read chapter 44, you would begin to wonder why Joseph couldn't restrain himself. The reason he couldn't restrain himself was he was so touched at the difference in attitude and the difference in character between what Judah and his brothers were now as opposed to what they were when they sold him into slavery. And so because of those differences, he is moved, and we have what we read in chapter 45. Chapter 45, beginning of verse 1, "Then Joseph could not restrain himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried out, 'Make everyone go out from me.' So no one stood with him while Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh heard it. Then Joseph said to his brothers, 'I am Joseph. Does my father still live?' But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed in his presence. And Joseph said to his brothers, 'Come near, please come near to me.' So they came near. And then he said, 'I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. But now, do not, therefore, be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth, and to save your lives from by a great deliverance. So now it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt.'" So, Joseph's reply to Judah is what? What does he do?
He cries and makes himself known.
All right, he begins to weep, and then he makes himself known. He reveals who he is to them. Now, what does he do before he reveals himself? All right, all the servants, all the Egyptians, everyone that wasn't he alone and his brothers is told to leave. And so, question number one, chapter 45, who was present with Joseph when he revealed himself to his brothers? He and them alone. Alright? Now, what was the first reaction of Joseph's brothers after he revealed himself? Alright? They were troubled. Notice what verse 3 says. They could not answer him, for they were dismayed in his presence. The literal Hebrew there is the idea of being terrified of his face.
I'd be freaking out.
They were afraid, not only because of it being Joseph, but also his position and just everything that has occurred. They are afraid of him because of what they've done. And you see, Joseph recognizes their reaction immediately by how he continues in his response. Notice, he then says, "Please come near to me." So they came near. He says, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt." I mean, there's no doubt. By the way, you think this might be the first time Benjamin finds out that his brother sold his older brother into Egypt?
Yeah.
You better believe it. I don't think that's anything they went spreading around to the little kid as he was coming up, who's now of this age. And so, yeah, by all indications, Benjamin would not have known this until Joseph says it. Then notice he says, "But now, do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourself." He attempts to get them to quash their feelings of grief, quash their feelings of anger with themselves and their conscience having beat them up, because you can remember all the way back to the year previously when they were there and they were in prison and Reuben made the statement, "This is God's punishment on us for what we did to our brother." He now tells them, put aside those things because God did this, not you. Question, did they do it? They committed the act. They committed the sin, but Joseph said God used their action. In the sense in which he could even say God was the one who did it. Now, this should tell us something about how sometimes the scripture speaks about God doing something. When God used it for his purpose, it met his ends, but he was not the one who did it. Okay? Absolutely. But it was in accordance with God's will to achieve his end of saving Jacob and his family. Now, could God have done it another way? Certainly he could have, but God used the method that was available because of the brother's actions to achieve his end. So Joseph here...
They were guilty of the action.
Absolutely. They were guilty. But God used it nonetheless. Okay? So,
it sounds like
Exactly. All right. What year of the famine did these events take place?
Second
year. All right. So let's step back and do a little bit of evaluation here. Just accepting that Joseph came into Egypt at age 17 when he had the dreams. He came into Egypt at age 17. How old was he when he was made second to Pharaoh in Egypt? Do you remember? No.
21.
I give you a hint. Same age Jesus started his ministry. 30. All right. So 13 years from, if he was sold into slavery, when he was 17, 13 years from the time he was sold into slavery until he became second in Egypt. And before the years of famine, how many years of plenty were there?
7 years
of plenty. So that meant he would have been, at that point, 37. All right? We could have now 2 years of famine, which means he's 39. Okay? So he's been in Egypt for approximately how many years if he was sold into slavery at age 17? 22. Okay? By all accounts, and based upon some other indications, it seems as though Benjamin may have been born the year Joseph was sold into slavery, which would make Benjamin approximately 22. All right.
What
now, Jesus' age was the connection. Nothing special about age 22. Benjamin would have been 22 at this age. If he was born the year Joseph was sold in slavery, and there's some indications that is the case. That was the year that he was made second in Egypt. So, age 30, he was made second in Egypt. Between age 30 and 37, He has two children, Ephraim and Manasseh. Age 37 is the year that the years of famine begin. We're 2 years into the years of famine, so he's 39.
How old was Pharaoh?
We have no idea. I have some information on that, because I got to thinking about the same thing. So we'll get there here in a second. Because that made me curious when I read that as well, so I went and did some research. All right, so verse 7, he says, God sent me here before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So he says, I'm here to continue the promise. In essence, he says, I'm here to continue the covenant that God made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, because without me, and without me having been in Egypt, everybody'd be dead. And therefore, it is the fulfillment and continuation of the covenant.
I want to come back to that. Mm-hmm. Yes. Is famine also a natural occurrence that God used, or was this a miraculous thing? Do you have any idea?
No idea. I would have to suggest that there's some aspect of miraculous in it, in the sense that God brought about 7 years of extreme plenty before 7 years of extreme famine. But there's also the ability of God to work within his laws of nature through providence, so I can't say one way or another. He says, verse 8, so now it was not you who sent me here, but God, and he made me a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Now, concerning this, question number 4, how did Joseph describe his relationship with Pharaoh? Father to Pharaoh. He said, Lord over his house. Lord over all his house. And a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Now, some have indicated, as we'll see here, that this is probably 3 different actual position designations within Egypt. Alright? Bible Archaeology Magazine, one of the articles that they have on their website, BibleArchaeology.org, makes this statement concerning this phrase. Genesis 45, verse 8, also calls Joseph father to Pharaoh. Of course, this does not mean that Joseph was the physical father of the king of Egypt. There was no blood connection between the two men. Pharaoh was an Egyptian, Joseph was a Hebrew, even if we assume, as many scholars do, that the Pharaoh in the Joseph story was a Hyksos king, and I'm not sure what all that is. I didn't go back to research it. There is no reason to suspect any blood relation between the two men. Dismissing that possibility, what then does the phrase father of Pharaoh mean? Father of Pharaoh, or more literally, this is literal translation, father of the god, the Egyptians believed their kings to be divine, had a variety of meanings in ancient Egypt. One was a term for the tutor of the king during the ruler's childhood. In Joseph's case, this is not likely. He had never met the king until called out of prison to interpret the royal dream, nor does the Bible ever suggest that Joseph held such a post. Another way the title was used was a designation for an individual whose daughter became a wife of the reigning king. In other words, father of the god meant father-in-law. Again, we may dismiss this meaning for Joseph's title. The Bible says nothing about Joseph having any daughters, let alone daughters who married the king of Egypt. Yet another usage of the title was a designation for minor priests in Egypt's complex state religion. Again, this does not seem even a remote possibility for Joseph. He was never a priest in Egypt, or in ancient Egypt, and as a servant of the true God, he would not ever want to hold such an office. A last use of the title, Father of the God, however, makes more sense for Joseph. The Egyptians used this title as a special honor given to officials who served long and well. or who had done the king some special favor. Joseph would easily qualify for the title Father of the God when used in this way. In fact, this is the only usage that makes sense. Joseph would have been named Father of the God for interpreting the dream of the king and for suggesting a plan for Egypt to get through 7 terrible years of famine. So, now that's something that without archaeological evidence and without outside resources would not have been easily discerned, but it seems at least a plausible explanation for the use of that phrase, Father of Pharaoh.
Well, because of his wisdom, it was smart. It was more like a father figure, maybe.
Absolutely. That could certainly be a great use of it. Correct. And you remember, even back in the very beginning, when Pharaoh was looking for someone to take the office that he will give to Joseph, he wanted Joseph because the Spirit of God was in him. Well, if Pharaoh recognizes the Spirit of God is in him and therefore I'm going to put him second in command in all of Egypt, you think he might occasionally go to him for advice, for wisdom, for, you know, those type of things? Certainly. It seems that way. So that would be an explanation as to why Joseph uses that description. The other terms, the Lord over all his house, is the idea seemingly of a steward in his house. He was the one with the control, the stewardship of everything Pharaoh had. And then a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt is the idea of showing his position and authority throughout the land. So it's really 3 different designations, seemingly, for his position, his authority, and the place and the prominence that he's been given. Verse 9, hurry and go up to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near to me. You and your children, your children's children, your flocks and your herds and all that you have. There I will provide for you, lest you and your household and all that you have come to poverty. For there are still 5 years of famine. And behold, your eyes and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it is my mouth that speaks, to you. So you shall take my father of all my glory in Egypt, and of all that you have seen, and you shall hurry and bring my father down here. Then he fell on his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept on his neck. Moreover, he kissed all his brothers and wept over them, and after that his brothers talked with him. Now the report of it was heard in Pharaoh's house, saying, Joseph's brothers have come, so it pleased Pharaoh and his servants well. Question number 5, summarize what Joseph told his brothers to tell Jacob.
Come on, bring everybody.
All right, come to Egypt. Say what? All right, there's 5 more years of famine.
And I'll take you have a place to stay, and I'll feed you.
Okay. His position, the food, that he was alive. That your son Joseph, verse 9, God has made me Lord over all Egypt. So just even that statement would be, tell him I'm alive. So yes, all of those things are a good summary of what he commanded his brothers to tell his father. Number 6, we haven't gotten down there yet. What happens when Pharaoh hears that Joseph's family is in Egypt? He's glad. Now, question. Could Joseph have used his position in Egypt, his authority as second in command over the whole nation, to have, over the last 9 years, sent out people throughout the land, back to his homeland, to try and find his family?
Of course.
Oh, he certainly could have. You may remember, though, that one of his sons was named such as the idea that God had blessed him to the extent that he had been able to finally put his family behind him and forget what had happened. And so Joseph even has attempted to move on, and now his family's returned. He's going to be able to bring them down to Egypt. Pharaoh hears about it, and Pharaoh is pleased. Notice also, verse 17, and Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Say to your brothers, do this, load your animals and depart, go to the land of Canaan. Bring your father and your households and come to me. I will give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you will eat the fat of the land. Now you are commanded, do this. Take carts out of the land of Egypt for your little ones and your wives. Bring your father and come. Also do not be concerned about your goods, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours." So what is it that Pharaoh promised or told the brothers of Joseph not to be concerned about? Not to be concerned about any possessions they had. For the best of the land of Egypt was awaiting them when they arrived.
Don't worry about it.
Now, the indication is they will still bring their things, but it's the assurance that they're not coming into poverty, they're not coming into sojourning, they're coming in, and Pharaoh is bringing them in to the best of the land. All right, notice verse 21. Then the sons of Israel did so, and Joseph gave them carts according to the command of Pharaoh, and he gave them provisions for the journey. He gave to all of them, to each man, changes of garments, but to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of garments. And he sent to his father these things, 10 donkeys loaded with the good things of Egypt, and 10 female donkeys loaded with grain, bread, and food for his father for the journey. So he sent his brothers away, and they departed, and he said to them, "See that you do not become troubled along the way." So he gives them the provisions. He sends them even basically treasures from Egypt sent back. Those poor donkeys, they're going to get there, they're going to turn around, they're going to have to carry all those treasures right back. But he sends them along as confirmation of his position, his authority, and the reality of what is being saved. Because bear in mind, his father's 130 years old or more. He is 130 years old because that's the statement that he'll make. All that being said, the expectation of Joseph is for these things to be a confirmation to Jacob he is alive. Because remember how they came back the last time. They went down to Egypt the first time. They ended up in prison. They came back without a brother, saying the only way we're going back down is with Benjamin. So Jacob gives in eventually when there's the point of desperation, sends Benjamin with them. They get halfway back. They have to turn back again. And now they're being sent back. There's going to be no doubt in Jacob's mind when he sees these things that it is Joseph. It is his son. And that they should go to Egypt. All right? Of course, God's going to help that out along the way as well. Yes.
Would that be quarrel? Is that a good translation?
I think it is. King James says, "Do not fall out." By the way, the New King James says, "So see that you do not become troubled along the way." I think.
They did talk to their
I think though the idea is become. The issue of selling Joseph to begin with and all of the things that have transpired and possibly laying blame on one another and all of these things, let alone you already see Joseph favoring Benjamin in sending the things back, Joseph is making sure they understand they need to get back to their father, they need to get him, they need to come to Egypt, and they need to leave the remainder of it where it is. And they need to simply recognize God's role in what has occurred. All right? Verse 25, so then they went out of Egypt and came to the land of Canaan to Jacob their father, and they told him, saying, "Joseph is still alive, and he is governor over all the land of Egypt." And Jacob's heart stood still because he did not believe them. But when they told him all the words which Joseph had said to them, and when he saw the carts which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob, their father, revived. Then Israel said, "It is enough. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die." What was Jacob's response to the news that Joseph was alive? All right. He didn't believe it at first. He saw the things that had been sent from Egypt. He believed it. And he says, "I'm going to go and I'm going to see my son before I die." All right. Chapter 46, briefly. So Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. Then God spoke to Israel in the visions of the night and said, "Jacob, Jacob." And he said, "Here I am." So he said, "I am God, the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt, for I will make of you a great nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again, and Joseph will put his hand on your eyes." Then Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father Jacob, their little ones and their wives, in the carts which Pharaoh had sent to carry him. So they took their livestock and their goods which they had acquired in the land of Canaan and went to Egypt, Jacob and all his descendants with him. Now, what did Israel do on his journey to Egypt? All right, he stopped in Beersheba, by the way, a reminder. Beersheba was the longtime residence of Isaac. Okay, that is where he lived for a long portion of his life. And so Jacob will stop in Beersheba on his way. He will offer sacrifices to God, and God will appear to him in a vision. What did God tell Jacob when he appeared to him in the vision? All right, he's going to make a great nation out of him in Egypt. What else? Don't be afraid to go. Now, this is simply a reminder because God has promised them what land?
Canaan.
He didn't promise them Egypt. He promised them Canaan. So God is assuring Jacob, "You go down to Egypt. This is my will." You remember also that at one point Isaac was prepared to go down to Egypt because of a famine, and God told him, "No, you don't go down to Egypt. You stay here in the land." And so this is God reassuring Jacob that this is what he is supposed to be doing. Verse, Exactly. So again, a reiteration of that covenant that he would bring him back to the land and that they would receive the inheritance they had been promised. So, verse 8, now these were the names of the children of Israel, Jacob and his sons, who went to Egypt. Reuben was Jacob's firstborn. The sons of Reuben were Hanok, Palu, Hezron, and Carmi. The sons of Simeon were Jemuel, Jamin, Ohad, Jachin, Zohar, and Sheul, and the son of a Canaanite woman. The sons of Levi were Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. The sons of Judah were Er, Onan, Shelah, Perez, and Zerah. But Er and Onan died in the land of Canaan. The sons of Perez were Hezron and Hamul. The sons of Issachar were Tola, Puva, Job, and Shimron. The sons of Zebulun were Sered, Elon, and Jaleel. These were the sons of Leah, whom she bore to Jacob in Padan Aram with his daughter Dinah, all the persons. His sons and his daughters were 33. The sons of Gad were Ziphion, Haggai, Shunai, Ezbon, Eri, Erobi, and Areli. The sons of Asher were Jimna, Ishua, Isui, Beriah, and Sirah, their sister. And the sons of Beriah were Heber and Malkiel. These were the sons of Zilpah, whom Laban gave to Leah, his daughter, and these she bore to Jacob 16 persons. The sons of Rachel, Jacob's wife, were Joseph and Benjamin, and to Joseph in the land of Egypt were born Manasseh and Ephraim. whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore to him. Excuse me. The sons of Benjamin were Bela, Beker, Ashbel, Gera, Naaman, Ehi, Rosh, Mopim, Hupim, and Ard. And these were the sons of Rachel, who were born to Jacob, 14 persons in all. The sons of Dan were Hushim. The sons of Naphtali were Jezeel, Gunai, Jezer, Shiliam. These were the sons of Bilhah, whom Laban gave to Rachel, his daughter, and she bore these to Jacob, 7 persons in all. All the persons who went with him went with Jacob to Egypt, who came from his body beside Jacob's sons' wives, were 66 persons in all. And the sons of Joseph, who were born to him in Egypt, were 2 persons. All the persons of the house of Jacob who went to Egypt were 70. Now, there's some discrepancies between Stephen's house in Acts chapter 6, I believe, 7. He says 75. This says 70, and then there's some discrepancies as well between the Septuagint version and the Hebrew version. We're not going to get into that tonight. We may deal with it very, very briefly 2 weeks from now, but for the sake of it, let me just leave it here. It can be explained. It's not a contradiction that destroys all Scripture. Okay? We'll just leave it at that. Verse 28, then he sent Judah before him to Joseph to point out before him the way to Goshen, and they came to the land of Goshen. Let's answer the questions, though, that I had along with that. How many were in the house of Jacob in Egypt according to this passage? 70. Okay. What does Joseph do when his family was arriving in Egypt? All right. Gets in his chariot to go meet him. You know, in my mind, it's a reminder of when the prodigal son's father sees him a far way off and runs to meet him and hugs his neck. Joseph wasn't going to wait for them to come to him. He went, when he heard that they were nearing the land, he went out to meet them. Verse 29, so Joseph made ready his chariot and went up to Goshen to meet his father Israel, and he presented himself to him and fell on his neck and wept on his neck a good while. And Israel said to Joseph, now let me die, since I have seen your face, because you are still alive. Then Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, I will go up and tell Pharaoh and say to him, my brothers and those of my father's house who were in the land of Canaan have come to me. And the men are shepherds, for their occupation has been to feed livestock, and they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have. All right? What was Jacob's response when he saw Joseph? I point out that question number 4 should be verse 29. Question number 5 should be verse 30. I mistyped those. Verse 33, so it shall be when Pharaoh calls you and says, what is your occupation, that you shall say, your servant's occupation has been with livestock from our youth even till now, both we and also our fathers, that you may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians. What did Joseph intend to tell Pharaoh that his brother's occupation was? Shepherds. What 2 reasons did Joseph have for wanting his brothers to tell Pharaoh they were shepherds?
Okay. Because it was an
abomination unto the Egyptians. All right. He had two purposes behind it. He wanted them to dwell in Goshen, and he knew that it was an abomination for the Egyptians to be with shepherds. Now, some have indicated that maybe this is not, you know, a strict rule because Egyptians had herds themselves and flocks, but instead that there was a particular difference between the city-dwelling Egyptians and the rural ones, and Joseph wanted the Israelites to dwell in the rural lands that they were used to. All I know is the text says that shepherds were an abomination to the Egyptians. So we'll leave it there. Jonathan will be covering chapter 47 next week. I will be in Nashville, Tennessee.